according to the map, we've only gone about 4 inches. You know, I don't think we have enough gas money.
Relax. We have more than enough.
I think you're wrong, Lloyd.
How much you want to bet?
I don't bet.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
care.
I don't.
Pussy.
I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right. I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-to-1 odds.
Nope.
5-to-1.
Nope.
10-to-1.
You're on.
I'm gonna get you.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how, but I'm gonna get you.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Sports Gambling Show. I am your friendly host, Derek Simon, and this is a show where we talk about everything and anything related to the world of sports gambling, and a lot to talk about today. Of course, the NFL playoffs are in full flight, and we've got Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. He's going to stop by later and tell us a little bit about the matchups this weekend. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about the odds, because it's interesting to me. I think it's very illustrative for those who want to learn about gambling to look at the playoff odds and understand what they mean. Because so often in gambling, we look at things as black and white. You know, one team wins, one team loses, and we forget about the probabilities. But before we get to all of that, there's a few things that you need to know.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
Alrighty then.
I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're gonna remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Tell you I can. Yes.
Before I talk about some specific races, the Stronach Group is proposing a $12 million world championship race, and I don't get it. Now, many of you who are racing fans, maybe some of you who aren't, know that there's already a championship race in Dubai, the Dubai World Cup. It's a $10 million race. And of course, there's the Breeders' Cup Classic. That's $5 to $6 million. And now Stronach wants a $12 million race to be run in January. It's a hard one to grasp on so many levels. First of all, let's talk about running a race in January. Of course, January 1st is the universal birth date of all horses. So if you're looking to have 3-year-olds compete, you're basically asking a horse that was 2 years old, a couple months ago, to compete. That doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. And then his idea is to have 12 shareholders who will each invest $1 million, and those shareholders then could enter one horse per share. Well, that's not really a championship race, is it? It's, hey, I've got $1 million. I'm going to buy a share, and I'm going to enter my horse, whether it's a championship horse or not. I don't get this idea, and granted, I don't have a lot of details. Maybe there are some other things that make this make sense, but the way it stands, I don't see it. Staying on the racetrack, some interesting races run last weekend at Santa Anita. I talked about it for USRacing.com. Remember to go to USRacing.com, by the way. We've got all kinds of news, blogs, adding stuff all the time. But I was talking about the races at Santa Anita. And there was the Sham Stakes and also the return of California Chrome. The Sham Stakes was interesting to me in that a horse by the name of Collected won the race, but the figures, not good.
It's taking them an age to sort themselves out. It's the Redham pair, Found Money and Semper Fortis, with I'm Already There out 3 wide, and Collected hung 4 deep on the turn into the back stretch. Lauban, the maiden, crosses to midfield. outside of Rare Candy, followed by Sorry About Nothing and a couple of lengths to Let's Meet in Rio. The field is covered by 7 lengths, and Semper Fortis now strides to the front by just over a length from Found Money on the inside of I'm Already There, with Collected running fourth in the three-path. Lauban very deep from Rare Candy, Sorry About Nothing in the orange colours. Last is Let's Meet in Rio as they cast the half-mile pole astern. The leader, Semper Fortis, from stablemate Found Money and I'm Already There, Collected the red cap. Lauban four wide with 3/8 to go. 2 to Rare Candy. 2 more lengths to Let's Meet in Rio, who moves past Sorry About Nothing. They're at the 5/16 pole. Collected, Semper Fortis, Found Money comprising a line of 3 leaders. Now Semper Fortis has dropped back sharply from between that pair, being passed by Lauban, who's running a very strong race. At the top of the lane, it's Collected on the outside, ahead in the front of Found Money, and 2 lengths to the maiden Lauban, and then a gap to I'm Already There, and Let's Meet in Rio making late ground, but Collected skips well clear with a 16th to go. Collected coming clear in the sham. Let's Meet in Rio flashing down the outside from last, a real eye catcher for the future, but Collected arrives a length clear of Let's Meet in Rio. Lauban third, Found Money probably fourth from I'm Already There.
Now, the one thing that impressed me about Collected is that in his turf races, he was kind of a one-dimensional speedball. And he came from off the pace and, in fact, was wide in the sham. So the one thing I would reject right away is people who say, well, look at the sham. Nobody can come out of the sham and win the Kentucky Derby. And you'll hear that a lot for various preps. These horses are young, and there's always room for improvement. So what you're looking for is a horse that is improving. I mean, you certainly wouldn't have looked at the Sunland Derby a few years ago and thought there's going to be two horses that come out of that race and win Grade One races. And in fact, after that, Mind That Bird being one of them, won the Kentucky Derby. But after that race, the Sunland Derby became graded. It was the way that race was run. I remember doing the figures on that a couple times, thinking something here isn't right, because the early speed figure was just off the charts. Nice thing about the sham, a -9 early speed ration. Of course, that is my own measurement of early energy distribution. -10 is considered to be a brisk pace. -9, pretty good. Late speed factor or late speed ration, not so good. There are some things to like about Collected. Just overall, not a great race, and certainly on the slow side. California Chrome and the San Pasqual was definitely a lot more impressive.
They approach the end of the back stretch, and it's Alpha Bird by a length to California Chrome, 3/4 to Blingo the inside, and then comes Imperative. Opportunity still waiting in the long grass. They're at the 5/16 pole. California Chrome tightening the screws on the long shot leader Alpha Bird at the quarter pole, and California Chrome looking full of vim and vigor has opened up 3 lengths. Alpha Bird second, now passed by Imperative, who's running a very good race at the 8th pole. California Chrome by a length and a half. Imperative in relentless pursuit, and Opportunity is now to the outside, finishing on. California Chrome's in front. He's holding Imperative safely at bay. California Chrome fully furnished into the mature athlete who could take 2016 by storm. He beat Imperative and Opportunity in the San Pasqual of 2016.
Well, nice to see California Chrome full of vim and vigor. Looked impressive. And California Chrome, I think, is going to have an impact. Now, what's interesting to me in the San Pasqual, I actually liked Alpha Bird in that race. I wrote about it for U.S. Racing. Got the kind of pace that I wanted, a +2 ESR, so incredibly slow. So again, looking at the sham and the San Pasqual, you basically have the San Pasqual about 11 lengths slower early, relatively speaking, because my pace figures are relative numbers. And Alpha Bird still couldn't get the job done. And that's, you know, where class sometimes raises its head. And I would look at Alpha Bird in the future and think, can this horse compete at this level? I'm not so sure. And I've written a lot about class in the past. A lot of times when you see those superior pace figures, talked about this with Ken Massa a couple shows ago, you have horses that you can kind of watch and look to ascend the class ladder. On the other hand, when you have a horse that gets that perfect setup, that gets kind of a speed or pace figure break and they still can't get it done, you got to at least be dubious going forward. And I was not at all impressed with Alpha Bird because, again, he got a perfect trip and couldn't get it done. But a nice effort by California Chrome, a 0 LSR, or late speed ration in that race. Of course, that is my own measurement of late energy disbursement. And unlike the early speed rations, you're looking for the higher figures there. So a pretty good effort by California Chrome. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about is odds, and specifically with the NFL playoffs going on. Well, actually, before I get to that, many of you know I'm from Seattle originally. I live in Denver. So I'm a Seahawks fan and I'm a Broncos fan, and that gets me a lot of grief from people telling me I need to pick a side. But I'm watching that Minnesota-Seattle game last week. And of course, you had the missed field goal at the end of the game to win it for Seattle. And Blair Walsh, the poor kicker of Minnesota, crying after the game, just devastated. I've said time and time again that kickers, that is the most unrespected position in football, and they've improved the most over the years. If you go back in the day, most of those kickers, the great ones, they were 50%. These guys never miss, and unfortunately, it sets a precedent where when you have a 27-yard field goal, anybody should make it. Absolutely was not the case many years ago. So it's just too bad, but there was kind of a funny thing that came out of this, or at least funny to me. Bunch of first graders wrote to Blair Walsh trying to cheer him up. And I'm not sure that it did the job. Listen to this.
Dear Blair, I feel bad for you.
You are so, so good at football. Keep on trying. We love you so much.
You were so close.
Keep on trying.
Don't give up. You're still number one.
Everyone loves you so much, and you are very good. I know you can do it. You can win the game. You are the best. And maybe you need to practice. Love, Cody.
It's that last one that cracks me up. Blair, it's all right. Just practice. That's all you got to do. Love, Cody. Anyway, there's some great games coming up this weekend, but again, I wanted to talk about the odds because this gets so confused. First of all, I saw this article, and it's about Bing, of course, the search engine Bing. This is from Geek Wire, and Bing is predicting the New England Patriots to win the Super Bowl. But what I thought was funny about this is most of the picks by Bing were favorites, and then at the end of the piece, there's this little thing. Bing predicts, that's the name of the program here, ended the regular NFL season with a 161-95 record. That's 63%. Of course, people see that and think, wow, 63%. This is pretty accurate. First of all, you're looking at about a third of the non-predicted teams winning. That's pretty high when you've only got a two-team event, because that has to be kept in mind too. It's a whole lot different when you're betting sports as opposed to betting the horse races. Of course, favorites in a typical horse race win about a third of the time, but you've got 8 to 10 to 12 entrants. In an NFL game, you've got two teams, so you go in with a 50-50 record. But it got me to thinking, how often do favorites win in the NFL? Guess what? And this according to the Wizard of Odds, a great website if you've never been there before. In fact, he was on a show I did a long time ago, the guy who runs that website. 67% of NFL favorites win. So Bing actually is less effective picking the games than if he just played the favorites. And of course, you know you're going to lose against the spread anyway, at least with a simple method like this. And there's something to be said for the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. The simplest way to play, and I've talked about this in relation to horse races too, the simplest way to play is to play the favorite. So if you can't beat what the favorites do, you got to find a different method. To give you an example in horse racing, if you play the favorites, it's actually the cheapest thing you can do. It's the way to get less red ink, I guess would be another way of putting it. You lose about 15%. Per bet, of course, so you can see how disastrous that would be over the course of, you know, any number of bets. But it's still less than if you just randomly chose a horse in a race. Because if you do that, your loss is going to be about 23%, somewhere in that vicinity. So anyway, Bing is predicting the New England Patriots, but that's not really what I wanted to talk about. On Nate Silver's side, of course, Nate Silver shot to prominence by picking some of the political races. And he has his ELO ratings. And he gives his Super Bowl odds. Couple things stand out. First of all, the Super Bowl odds are all very, very close. He's got Carolina at the top of the heap at about 9-2, Arizona at 5-1. That's interesting because both of those teams are in the same conference. As we're going to talk about later, that can definitely play a part in the odds. Kansas City 6-1. That was really interesting to me. Denver at 6-1, Seattle 7-1, New England at 8-1. And then rounded out with Pittsburgh, Green Bay has got the longest odds. The thing that is intriguing to me is when you look at any kind of a speculative event in terms of odds, you start to see why the odds are what they are. Let me explain. Seattle, according to Nate Silver, is the best team in football. They've got a 1,718 ELO rating. That is the best in the league. But Seattle has got the fifth lowest Super Bowl odds. So four teams, according to Silver, have a better chance of winning the Super Bowl. Well, how can that be? It's because Seattle has to play more games, for one. And they have to go on the road to play these games. That is going to affect the odds. So hopefully that illustrates why probabilities are important and why when you look at a race or you look at a game, you don't just say, well, this is the best team, therefore they're going to win. Anyway, going to come right back and talk to Kevin Rogers and learn a little bit more about those probabilities as we look forward to the games this weekend. Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. Clue, it's probably not going to be P. Diddy, but he's on the list of betting options. And if you're a racing fan like me, you'll love the daily menu and special prop bets. Thoroughbred Racing, check. International Racing, check. Greyhound Racing, check. Harness Racing, check. Generous Rebates, checkmate. USRacing.com also has a wide variety of casino games as well. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
Now here's why you can win.
Every time you lose, you die a little bit. You die inside, a portion of you. Not all of your organs, maybe just your liver.
In our business, there is no second place. Either you're first or you're last.
You sick, sonsy.
If you walk in that door on your two legs all fat and cocky,
you, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Remember, we do everything in reps. So if you have 2 reps of water drinking, usually we do 10 reps of everything, so do another rep of water drinking.
I'm now joined by Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. And before we talk about this week's games, Kevin, your impression of A, the national championship game, and the NFL games from last weekend.
Good to talk to you, Derek. First, with the national championship, obviously a very entertaining game and a good cap to a very poor bowl season with a lot of blowouts that we saw over the past few weeks. So it was nice to see an entertaining game to close things out. I had Clemson plus the points, and obviously you knew the whole game. It was never in doubt, right? But, no, Clemson scored that late touchdown. Obviously, it saved a lot of people that had the Tigers, and it swung a lot of money in Vegas, apparently, for everyone that had Alabama. But when you see how the game was played, Clemson's winning that game in the second half, and they had opportunities to really put the dagger to Alabama, and they couldn't do it. And the Crimson Tide had all of these big plays that they were able to convert on, a couple, you know, the Derrick Henry run, a couple pass plays, a kickoff return, the onside kick. That just Alabama executed. That's what they do. And they almost feel like the San Antonio Spurs now of college football, that you're not thrilled to see them, you're not excited to see them, but you know what they're going to do and what they're going to bring. And it turned out to be a pretty good championship game. Now, as far as the NFL playoffs go, you know, when you see four road teams win and you see the quarterbacks of the four losing teams and what's out there, and you say, how are these teams in the playoffs? You know, but the best thing is that Kansas City advanced. They were a team that had won 10 straight. That Cincinnati-Pittsburgh finish, which was obviously controversial and entertaining, however you want to put it. The only bad part is now that Ben Roethlisberger is beat up going into this game against Denver. And then you look at the two Sunday games. The Packers came back to life with their win over the Redskins, and obviously Seattle-Minnesota with that missed field goal at the end. You would have thought the Seahawks would have been knocked out. I think Seattle kind of got a second life, too, by them coming back and winning that game in chilly Minnesota.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and I admit to being a homer because I'm from Seattle, but I actually really like Seattle's chances against Carolina. I just think they match up well with them. Those games have traditionally been close. I know the point spread isn't much. And I'd done a thing earlier on the show where I talked a little bit about the odds and trying to, you know, help people understand that when you've got a speculative event, whether it's horse racing or NFL football, pretty much anything, the odds matter. I did find it interesting looking at some of the Super Bowl odds. You've got two teams from the NFC listed amongst the top three. Arizona 7-2 on some sites. I think this is a conglomeration of the different, you know, different betting options out there. New England number 2 at 4-1, Carolina at 5-1. How do you see the Super Bowl picture right now, you know, notwithstanding the games coming up this weekend?
You know something, it's so wide open right now, you know, especially in the NFC. The AFC, I find it hard to believe that the Chiefs and the Steelers will both win this weekend. I mean, not saying that I'm like dropping any kind of great knowledge here by taking the chalk with Denver and New England, but I look at the NFC and the four teams that are left right now, I think an argument can be made for all four of them that, you know, you look at Green Bay and how they played very subpar in the, or they were very subpar in the second half of the season after a great start. And I went into last week's game against Washington kind of with the mindset of they're either going to get bounced here or they can make the Super Bowl. That is one of those things. We see those teams in the NCAA tournament sometimes that you wonder if they could just get that one win to kind of get going, then they can go on a run. And that's the case with Green Bay, I think, that they could end up, you know, now getting some momentum and winning a few games on the road. Aaron Rodgers has done that in the past, so that's nothing new for him and the Packers. And you look at Carolina, 15-1 team, home field advantage. But on the flip side, like you said, with Seattle, that they've had Cam Newton's number for the most part, except for losing at home this year. But still, Cam Newton does have great numbers against that Seahawks defense. And then you look at Arizona, that this is a team that, you know, they capitalized off of last year, even though Carson Palmer got hurt, and now he's healthy this year. And it's a very fun team to watch. They've been great at home. You could see them maybe, you know, getting it going and winning a few games. I mean, if Seattle knocks out Carolina and Arizona wins, Arizona's going to get home field against Seattle, so they'll get two home games prior to the Super Bowl. I think the four teams, the NFC, can all have an argument. The AFC, I find it hard to see the Chiefs winning two to get to the Super Bowl on the road. And for Pittsburgh, it's just the Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown situation is the hardest thing because the two of them being hurt. And the Broncos, we know Peyton's still got to step up and he hasn't been great this season, but that's a very good defense that the Steelers will be facing without a healthy Roethlisberger. So that'd be a problem. So I look at the AFC, probably Denver, New England, but the NFC, you almost flip a coin with these four teams.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me looking at the Super Bowl odds. Green Bay is 16-1. I felt they looked really, really good last week, you know, and I'd seen a bunch of their previous games and they didn't impress me at all, but boy, I thought they put it together last weekend against a Washington team that really didn't play that badly. So let's talk a little bit about these games, Kevin. Where are we going first?
First, we will look at Saturday night. We'll look at Green Bay, Arizona. And, you know, I kind of felt this way with the Vikings and the Seahawks last week, that when teams meet up again for the second time in a short amount of time, that a lot of people look at the first result and they say, oh, well, Seattle killed Minnesota, then they're gonna beat them bad again. And I say, hold on a second. You know, the second time around, now they've played, you're not going to get that same effort probably from the winning team because of what they did, and the losing team will be motivated. And that's the case here with Green Bay and Arizona, that these two teams met in Week 16 in Arizona, and the Cardinals destroyed the Packers. All right, fine, fresh in everyone's mind. Now, all of a sudden, the Packers go back out there again. Now they know what to look for against Arizona, and they went to the playoffs a few years ago, out to Arizona, lost that wild 51-45 game in overtime, the one where Aaron Rodgers lost the ball in OT. They got taken back for a touchdown. Now you're getting 7 points with a Green Bay team that has proven their worth on the road, that they've won at Washington. Say what you want about the Redskins, they still went on the road and won convincingly. They had Seattle put away last year in the NFC Championship before a couple of miscues at the end, and obviously Seattle beat them in overtime, but Green Bay still covered. And you look at Arizona, for as good as they've been, that, and even with Carson Palmer, for as well as he's played, Carson Palmer, find me the postseason success he's had in his career. And I understand going with the Bengals, he tore his knee up against the Steelers. He was in Oakland and never made the playoffs. And even, you know, last year he had some bad luck. He didn't get to go to the playoffs because he got hurt midway through the season. Arizona had to play with a backup against Carolina. But where's the success of Arizona in the postseason? That's what I kind of wonder with this game. And, you know, no Tyrann Mathieu for the Cardinals. He tore his ACL against the Eagles. So I think that Aaron Rodgers has a lot of advantages there. And also that the running game has performed well for the Pack of late. So I just think taking the points that you got to look at this, especially after a lot of people will look at Arizona simply because of what they saw a few weeks ago in their route of Green Bay in Week 16.
Boy, I totally agree with that pick. I think the worst thing in the world when you like a team is to have that team coming off of a blowout win over the team that they're playing again. All the adjustments are made by the losing team. I mean, why is the winning team going to make any kind of changes? Yeah, I definitely thought you saw that in the Minnesota game, because even take away the weather, you know, if Seattle wins that, and Russell Wilson was not sharp, maybe he hits some of those other passes, but they're still not winning 38-7. So, boy, I'm with you on that game. What else you got?
Looking at Sunday, the other NFC game with Seattle and Carolina, that Seattle lost at home to Carolina earlier this year. And that was a game where the Seahawks were up and the Panthers came back and won. And the Panthers played well at the end. And Cam Newton finally slayed the Seahawks for the first time in his career. That when these teams had played, there was a lot of low-scoring, ugly games between the two of them. And now Carolina, all of a sudden, they got the target on their back. Granted, Seattle's the team that's won the NFC the last 2 years, and they're the team to slay in a sense. But Carolina came within 2 games of finishing 16-0 on the season. They lose to Atlanta. They win their finale against Tampa. So now they're 15-1 going to the playoffs, where this is their shot. I mean, Cam Newton's still young. He's got a long way to go. But I think we've seen this through the years, Derek, in sports, that you have to take advantage of a great season. I mean, I remember even shifting to baseball with the Washington Nationals when they sat Steven Strasburg. And I know this situation has nothing to do with Carolina, but, you know, they thought, oh, we're going to come back, we'll be fine, that we're young and we're going to be back in the World Series or be back in the NLCS. They never made it back, and they didn't make it out that year. So for Carolina, all the pressure is on them, because they're probably not going to have another 15-1 season coming up. It just probably won't happen. So now they're facing a team that they've had problems with over the years, even though they beat them earlier this year. So you don't think Pete Carroll's going to be ready for this game against Carolina? And I always like taking teams, elite teams, coming off of close victories, especially in the playoffs. That Seattle escaped Minnesota last week. They escaped the cold. They were down 9-0. Russell Wilson made that miraculous play. The snap went over his head. He fell on and he throws it down the field, and that got the momentum going a little bit for Seattle. They didn't get up a touchdown last week. I mean, you think about it, that people say they escaped. They still played very well defensively. And yes, Carolina's better offensively than Minnesota is, as far as, you know, you do have a better quarterback. But as far as receivers go and a running game, I mean, is Carolina that much better? Or did Carolina really take advantage of a weak NFC South this year, where they didn't get Atlanta till the end? New Orleans, they faced without Drew Brees early on in the season, and Tampa Bay, who was pretty much average. So they took advantage of a lot of that this year. And I think with Seattle, that, you know, obviously they've been here before. The weather is not going to be a factor this week. I don't care about them going cross country. They travel all the time. They're grown men. They'll be fine. So that doesn't worry me at all. And, you know, obviously they have a normal work week because they played Sunday to Sunday, so they don't lose a day of prep. I just think that Seattle here, that they're definitely worth a strong look going on the road to beat Carolina.
I like it. I like it a lot. Any opinion on the AFC games?
You know, I kind of lean towards the Patriots against the Chiefs. I looked at this line and I said, wow, it seems a little short initially. And, you know, Kansas City, they've been great since that 1-5 start. They won 10 straight to close out the season. They beat Houston last week in convincing fashion. But on the flip side, Brian Hoyer was horrible against the Chiefs, and I know he's not obviously in the upper tier of the NFL quarterbacks. Now you're facing Tom Brady. And the Patriots, to close out the season, did not look good. They lost that game to the Jets with a coin flip in overtime, and they didn't play too well against the Dolphins in the season finale. So they got to kind of get their stuff together here in the playoffs. But at the same time with the Chiefs, Jeremy Maclin, if he doesn't end up playing, that's going to be a huge blow for the Chiefs offensively. You don't have Jamal Charles out there. And, you know, I just think that New England, it's not asking a lot for them to cover this number, basically winning by a touchdown or more. Then you look at the AFC, there's just so many question marks with that Steelers game with Big Ben and with Antonio Brown that it's hard to make an argument for Pittsburgh just because you don't know what their game plan is with Big Ben. Now, obviously, I'm taking an injured Ben Roethlisberger over a healthy Landry Jones. But I look at Denver, too, and I say, they've lost to the Colts at home in the playoffs. They've lost to Baltimore at home in the playoffs. That home field advantage, I don't think, is as rock solid as people really think. That we've seen Peyton lose at home in the playoffs before in games that he should win. So that's where I can't really be 100% sold on Denver. It's just the status of your top quarterback, of your quarterback and of your top receiver is up in the air, and it's hard to really make a pick right now in that game.
Yeah, and I think we're on the same page with New England. I mean, New England's getting a lot of players back. Once again, the last time they met Kansas City, you had a blowout. Kansas City did not move the ball that well in that Houston game, and you're right. That performance by Hoyer ranks as the all-time worst quarterback performance I've ever seen, and I saw Rick Meyer play in Seattle, so that's not a good thing. Hey, Kevin, as always, thank you so much. I hope you have a great weekend.
All right, Derek, thank you, too.